So welcome. Yeah, today is a very special day. Today is Ram Navami. So maybe we can read something in the Bhagavatam about Lord Ram. Is that okay?
Yes.
And then we can share some thoughts and see how everyone feels. So if anyone wants to know, I'm reading from 9th canto of the Bhagavatam. And I'm reading from the 10th chapter, which is the pastimes of the Supreme Lord, Ramachandra. And I'm reading from text number 2. So just so you're aware, well, let's do a bit of a quiz before we begin. The Bhagavad Gita, Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita talks about 5 main topics. Does anyone know? Can anyone name one of those topics?
Jiva.
Okay, you're going to say earlier then. Okay, go ahead. So Jiva means the soul, the individual. The next one is?
Ishvara.
Yeah, the karma. Supreme Lord.
Karma.
Prakriti, the material world. And?
Kala
is there, definitely. But yeah, those are the 5, yeah. So the spirit soul, Jiva, is living in the material world, Prakriti. And in the material world, the Jiva is performing activities, karma. In order for all of this to happen, there has to be kala, time. And outside of this whole system is Ishvara, God. So those are the 5 topics of the Gita. Okay, now the question gets harder. There are 10 subjects in the Bhagavatam. Does anyone know what the 10 subjects in the Bhagavatam are?
Saranga.
Okay, Sarga. Atra Sarga. Sarga means creation, yeah, primary creation.
Visarga,
yeah, secondary creation. So I'll explain what primary and secondary is in a minute, but let's see if you can go further. Yeah, anything else do you think that's talked about as a major topic in the Bhagavatam? Yeah, have a guess.
The manus and the changing.
Yeah, the manus. Yeah, manus are like fathers of mankind. So manu comes from, like we have the word man. So man comes from manu. Manu means the fathers of mankind. Maintenance, yeah, this is called sthanam, like how this planetary system is maintained. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, yeah, it's there are 10 topics in the Bhagavatam. In a verse from the second canto, it said, Atra sargo visarvascha sthanam poshanam utaya manvandare shanukatha nirodha muktir ashraya. So I'll explain just very quickly because it's relevant. The first thing the Bhagavatam talks about is sarga, which means primary creation. In order for the material world to be created, there needs to be ingredients. But those ingredients first themselves need to be created. So the ingredients of material nature are the elements of the world, you know, earth, water, fire, air, ether, and then the subtle elements, senses and other things. So this is known as primary creation. So this is the first topic of the Bhagavatam. Then Visarga means secondary creation. So then once all the ingredients are there, then you need a cook. Then you need someone, an engineer. So Brahma is the engineer of the universe. Sometimes people say Brahma is the creator of the universe, but it's not strictly true because he doesn't actually create anything. He just engineers the ingredients. And then he makes the planets, the species, and all the different situations. So this is the second topic of the Bhagavatam, how Brahma does that. Atra sargo visargascha sthanam. Sthanam means that once he creates the universe, the material world, then there is sthanam, planetary systems, which are maintained. So yesterday I was explaining there's 14 planetary systems. So that's the next thing the Bhagavatam talks about. Poshanam means protection or nourishment or care. So once the living entities are in the material world and they're functioning here, How does the Supreme Lord care for them and make sure that everything is going on nicely? Poshanam Utaya. Utaya, Uti means the creative impetus. So what is that thing which makes the world go round? What do you think? What do they say in famous poetry? What makes the world go round? It's a sex life. Well, the original poetry says love makes the world go round. But actually in the material world, in one sense we can say lust is making the world go round. Once Prabhupada was walking actually past the city, I think it was France. Maybe it was France or maybe it was New York, Paris or New York. And Prabhupada looked at the skyline and he saw all these big buildings, skyscrapers. So Prabhupada said, I can understand that there are many beautiful men and beautiful women in this city. It was like, what's the connection? Mm-hmm. Says, because as soon as there is attraction between man and woman, then there is all of this expansion and expansion of buildings, expansion of different things, because everything begins from lust. So Prabhupada saw the skyline and you could say, yeah, there's a lot of attraction, yeah, lust. Lust expands everything. So that's the next topic of the Bhagavatam, creative impetus kriti. And then manvantara means the manus. In order for the universe to be populated, there needs to be what we call fathers of mankind. So they populate, that's manus. Ishanukatha means then the Bhagavatam talks about there's this whole material system going on. So what does the Lord do? Periodically he comes into the world. And when the Lord comes into the world, is called a... What do we call it when the Lord comes?
Avatar.
Avatar, yeah. And avatar is an interesting word. Ava means to come. And tar comes from the Sanskrit tarine, which means down. So avatar literally means to come down. So when the Lord incarnates, then it said he comes down. Comes down from where? Yeah, it comes from the spiritual world down to the material world to help living entities go back. So that's the eighth topic of the Bhagavatam. The seventh topic. And then the eighth topic of the Bhagavatam is Ishanukata, Nirodha, annihilation. How is everything annihilated in time, in due course of time? Mukti, how does that's the next topic, how does the living entity, what do they have to do to get released from the world? And the final topic is Ashraya, who is the supreme shelter, who is the supreme lovable object? So why is this relevant today? Because the Bhagavatam, one of the main topics of the Bhagavatam is Ishanukatha, the different activities that the Lord performs when he comes to this world. So like so many of the avatars of Krishna and what they do in the world is all explained in Bhagavatam. Like, can you name some avatars whose activities are explained in Bhagavatam? Shingadev, in which canto? The Shingadev, seventh canto. Yes? Good, no? Good. Anyone else?
Varaha Dev.
Varaha Dev, when the Lord comes as a boar, what canto is that?
Is it four or six?
Three. Good. Three. Third canto is Varaha Dev. Seventh canto is Nishinga Dev. Any other avatars? Matsya Avatar. Yeah, which canto is that?
Eight or nine.
Matsya Avatar is 11 or 12, I think, actually. Quite deep. I'm not sure actually. I can check. I'll check later. We'll check it later. I can't remember off the top of my head. Yeah, Matsya Avatar is Hare Krishna. When the Lord comes as a fish. Any other avatars?
Kaki.
Kalki avatar, when the Lord comes at the end of Kali Yuga to annihilate everything. And what canto is that?
12,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any others?
Ah, Kapila Dev.
What canto is that?
Third canto.
Yes, Kapila Dev is third canto. So like that, many incarnations of the Lord come. In the fifth canto, we're reading about an incarnation of the Lord right now. Who's that? Rishabhadev in the fifth canto. So like that, the Supreme Lord comes to this world. And in the ninth canto of the Bhagavatam, a full description of Lord Ram's pastimes are given in a summary way. So it's nice to read. In an ancient verse in the Niti Shastra, the Niti is like scriptures of logic, we find this verse. Grahata dyuti prasangena madhyama stri prasangataha Ratri chauri prasangena kalau gachati dhimahi. So the scripture says, kalau gachati dhimahi. How does an intelligent person pass their time? What does an intelligent person do to pass their time? So you know what the scriptures of logic say? Prahata dyuti prasangena. In the morning, they speak about gambling. Then, madhyama stri prasangataha. In the middle of the day, they talk about women. Ratri chaura prasangena. And in the evening, they talk about stealing. That's how an intelligent person passes their time. Anyone want to decode it, what it means? How is it that an intelligent person spends their time like this? Because in the morning, they're speaking about gambling, but they're not just speaking about any gambling. They're speaking about the gambling match which took place between the Kauravas and the Pandavas because they're reading which book? The Mahabharata. So in the morning, they read the Mahabharata. During the day, they're speaking about women, but which women are they speaking about? Sita Devi, who was like the emblem of chastity, who was married to Lord Ram, because they are discussing which book?
Ramayana.
And in the evening, they're talking about stealing, because there was someone who used to steal butter, to steal the clothes of the gopis, used to steal the hearts of his devotees. Because they're reading all about Krishna, whose activities are found in the Bhagavatam. So if you're an intelligent person, then you spend your time like this. In the morning you speak Mahabharata, then Ramayana, then Bhagavatam, Shastra. This is how an intelligent person spends their time. So we're reading from the second verse of the 10th chapter of the 9th canto. I'll just read the Sanskrit. Tasyabhi bhagavanesha shakshad bhaman mayohari amshamshena chaturdhagat putatram pratitasure ramalakshmana bharata shatrugna iti samyaya. Being prayed for by the demigods, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth Himself, directly appeared with his expansion and the expansions of the expansion. Their holy names were Ram, Lakshman, Bharat, and Shatrughna. These celebrated incarnations thus appeared in four forms as the sons of Maharaj Dasarath. Purple. Lord Ramachandra and his brothers, Lakshman, Bharat, Shatrughna, are all Vishnu Tattva, not Jiva Tattva. The Supreme Personality of Godhead expands into many, many forms. Advaitam Achyutam Anadim Anantarupam. Although they are one and the same, Vishnu Tattva has many forms and incarnations. As confirmed in the Brahma Samhita, Rama Dimurti Shukala Niyamena Tisthan. The Lord is situated in many forms, such as Ram, Lakshman, Bharat, Shatrughna. and these forms may exist in any part of his creation. All these forms exist permanently, eternally, as individual personalities of Godhead, and they resemble many candles, all equally powerful. Lord Ramchandra, Lakshmana, Bharat, Shatrughna, who, being Vishnutattva, are all equally powerful, became the sons of Maharaj Dasarath in response to the prayers by the demigods. Ramachandra Bhagavan ki
jai.
So maybe I'll try to give you an overview of the whole Ramayana in 5 minutes. The Bhagavatam is 18,000 verses. You know how many verses the Mahabharata is? 100,000 is said to be the longest poem in the world. Much bigger than the Iliad and the Odyssey and all of these books of literature. And Ramayana, anyone know how many verses the Ramayana is? So 25,000 verses. It's very long. So 5 minutes, we'll do 1,000 verses a minute. 5,000 verses a minute. Ram's pastimes are basically, you can say, in four main sections. Firstly, there's the early life of Lord Ram, like how he was born. Lord Ram's father, his name was Dasarath. Dasarath means 10 chariots. It can also mean the 10 directions, because he was such a valiant fighter that when he moved on the battlefield, it felt like he was in all 10 directions at the same time. Mm. Have you ever seen, like, when you have a fire, like a firework, and you go like this and you go really fast, then it feels like a circle. You look like you're seeing a whole circle, but there's just one light, but it's like a circle. Mm. It's so fast. So Dasarath was like that. He's an amazing fighter, he was a great king, everything was perfect. There was just one problem. In life, there's always one problem. Everything's never perfect. So does anyone know what the one problem Dasarath had was? Everything was great, but there was one problem.
Couldn't have children.
So it's a long story, but his teacher, Vasistha, came to him and said, okay, we'll do a sacrifice. And from that sacrifice came a pot of sweet rice. And Dasarath, he had 3 wives. His wives were named Kaushalya, Kaikeyi, and Sumitra. So he had this pot of sweet rice, and Vasistha said, if you give this sweet rice, then they will have children. So then he thought, oh, but how to do that, you know? So he divided it into 4 parts, and he gave 1 part to Kaushalya, 1 part to Kaikeyi, and 1 part and 2 parts to Sumitra, whatever was remaining. So from the 1 part that Kaushalya had, who was born? Who was the son of Kaushalya?
Ram
was the son of Kaushalya. And then the son of Kaikeyi was?
Bharat.
Yes, and then Sumitra, she had 2 sons, and her 2 sons were named? Shatrughna and Lakshman. Yes, so these were the 4 brothers who were born, and here in this verse it's explained that they were all incarnations of the Supreme Lord, expansions. So when Krishna comes to this world, he comes in different forms, and he comes with his different associates and expansions. The names are very interesting. Ram means one who gives pleasure to others. Bharata means one who is holding a heavy burden. Lakshman means one who is very wealthy. And Shatrughna means one who has killed his enemies. So later on, we'll learn why these names are significant. Because in Vedic scriptures, the name is not just random. The name, even when you take initiation, is said that the spiritual name you get, it has a special, something special related to you. every name has something special for the person who gets that name. So sometimes it indicates many, many things. Like say, for example, Duryodhan. Do you know what the literal meaning of Duryodhan is? Dirty fighter. Or Dhritarashtra. You know the blind king, Dhritarashtra? Do you know what the literal meaning of the name Dhritarashtra is? Dhri means to hold and Rashtra means land. So it literally means one who's holding on to the land. Amazing. Huh? Does anyone know what the literal meaning of Ravana is? One who makes others cry. So then you start thinking, like, why would not someone name their child? Why would someone name their child Duryodhan? But Sanskrit is such an amazing language that all of these names also have double meanings as well. Anyway, it's going off on tangent. But names are very, very interesting. So when you get initiated or you get a spiritual name, you have to think deeply because it has something... it has some significance in your life. It's not just random. So they were given all these names, and we'll find out what these names mean. But they grew up together, and they were all wonderful brothers. Everything was perfect. And in time, everyone knew that Ram was the oldest. Ram was so righteous. He was so wonderful that definitely he would become the king. So everyone was happy. No one had an issue with it. But there was just one person in the whole kingdom who had an issue with it. Everyone else was fine. But there was one person in the whole kingdom who had an issue that Ram was going to become the king. And anyone know who that was?
Kaikeyi.
But Kaikeyi actually herself didn't have an issue herself. She loved Ram. But she was influenced by someone who did have an issue. Her servant, and who? What was her servant's name? Does anyone remember?
Mantara.
Yes, Kaikeyi. She had a maid servant, and the maid servant's name was Mantara. So when Ram was about to be coronated, then Mantara came to Kaikeyi, and she said, "Why are you so happy?" Kaikeyi said, "Because Ram's going to become king. It's wonderful." But Mantara said, "But your son is Bharat." And don't you understand that if Ram becomes the king, then our husband Dasarath, he will give more attention to Kaushalya because she is the mother of Lord Ram. So you will become neglected. So like this, she started influencing Kaikeyi to think that she's going to lose out if Ram becomes the king. So then Mantara said, "You got to somehow stop Ram from becoming the king, otherwise your future is in jeopardy." So Kaikeyi gradually became more and more influence, power of association. And then eventually Mantara said to Kaikeyi, there's a way in which you can stop it. Because once Dasarath offered you any wish you'd like, and now you can ask him for that wish. And Kaikeyi said to him, "What should I ask for?" And Mantara said, "You should ask that Ram be banished from the kingdom." And somehow Kaikeyi got influenced in that way. So then she went to Dasarath and she said, "Oh, I want Ram to be banished from the kingdom." Dasarath fainted in disbelief. But what to do? He had to hold his word. And so Ram was exiled to the forest. So this is the first part of the Ramayana, how Ram grew up and then eventually he was exiled to the forest. So the next part of the Ramayana is all about how Lord Ram and Sita are in the forest and what happens in their 14 years of exile. But the major thing that happens in the 14 years of exile is that one day one demoness comes to see them, and her name is Shurpanakha. And Shurpanakha is the wife or the sister of Ravan. So one day Shurpanakha comes and she sees Ram in the forest and she falls in love with Ram. And then she tries to approach Ram, saying, I want to marry you, I want to marry you. And anyway, it's a long pastime, but later on, Lakshman chases her away and cuts her nose off. That's why Shurpanaka, nak means your nose. So Shurpanaka means one whose nose is cut off. So she chases him, he chases her away. And then she goes back to her brother, Ravan, and she wants to get revenge. She wants Ram. But what the way that Shurpanaka does it is she says to Ravan that, don't you know there's the most beautiful lady out there? You think you have all the most beautiful ladies in your palace, but there's one lady out there who's way more beautiful, and her name is Sita, and she's living in the forest. And if you really want to find happiness in this life, then you have to capture her. And so she incites Ravan to want to capture Sita. And then there's that whole pastime of how Ravan captures Sita and takes her away. And so this is the next part of the Ramayana, dealing with Ram in the forest and how Ravan captures Sita. And then the next part of the Ramayana deals with how Ram tries to find Sita once she's been kidnapped. So Ram makes a friendship with the monkey warriors, and they all go in different directions. And the most famous of the monkey warriors is who?
Hanuman.
Yeah. So sometimes we say in the world they have Spider-Man, Superman, but in the Vedic scriptures they have Hanuman. So Hanuman is like a hero, he's a monkey warrior, very valiant. So eventually Hanuman goes to the south of the country, and then he jumps over to Lanka, and then he finds out where Sita is. And then the last part of the Ramayana then deals with how they realize that Sita is in Lanka with Ravan, and we have to go and fight with Ravan and rescue her. And so they build a bridge. They build a bridge to Lanka, and then the whole army goes, and then they have a fight with Ravan, and then they bring Sita back, and then Ram is established back in the kingdom as the monarch, and then they lived happily ever after. So that's basically the whole story of the Ramayana. And in the Ramayana, many, many different teachings are given, many, many different beautiful things are explained. But in essence, we could summarize it like this. Every incarnation of the Supreme Lord has a special purpose. So Krishna, he is known as Lila Purushottam, the Supreme Lord who comes to display the most beautiful pastimes of love. So when we hear about Krishna, basically is drowning our heart in love, because the way Krishna interacts with his devotees is all about love, pastimes of love, prema vilas. So Krishna is known as Lila Purushottam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is known as Prema Purushottam, because when he comes as the Supreme Lord, he's teaching people how to develop love, and he's displaying love. His whole thing is to help people develop love. But Lord Ram, he is known as Maryada Purushottam, which means the Supreme Lord who shows the ideal example. So when we read Ramayana, when we read all about Ram, then we're learning how to become an ideal son or daughter, how to become an ideal ruler, how to become an ideal partner, how to be ideal in your character. Everything that Lord Ram does is ideal, exemplary. And so when we hear about Lord Ram, there's so much we can gain from his life example and life story. Okay, let me stop there and see whether you may have any specific question or anything you want to know more about with regards to Ram or anything that we discussed today. Anyone would like to ask anything? Yes.
I remember that as because Sita Devi was kidnapped and was kind of abused, but she wasn't, of course, abused by Ravana, another man, that Ramachandra couldn't accept her back. So...
How do we understand this?
Yeah,
this is the most heartbreaking part of the Ramayana.
Yeah.
Because what happens is Sita, she's like so chaste. Sita is like, when Ram gets banished to the forest, Sita says, I want to come with you. And Ram's like, you've lived in the palace your whole life. How are you going to be able to come and live in the forest with me? And she's just like, no. And then she says this beautiful thing. She says, Ram, without you, Ayodhya is like the forest. And with you, even the forest becomes like the most beautiful kingdom. So I just want to be with you. So she's like the ideal example of like chastity, loyalty, love, like standing by Ram no matter what. And even when she gets kidnapped by Ravan, her chastity means Ravan can't even come close to her because her chastity, she's so pure. Yet what happens is that later on when Ram brings Sita back, then Ram, he's listening out to what people are saying about him. Mm. And then he hears that one washerman says like, this Ram, like he's so, he's lost his integrity, he's lost his respect. It's just like, why? Because this Ram, Sita's been with another man and he's accepted her back. What kind of person would do that? He's lost his integrity, his principles. So some man was just saying like that. And Ram, he took it so seriously that someone saying something bad about me. Mm. But the king, his character should be spotless. No one should criticize. So therefore, I will banish Sita. And you think like, when you read that, you think like, how can he banish, like this person, just saying something, empty criticism. And just for that, he banishes Sita. So what's the deeper reason why Ram banishes Sita? The deeper reason is this. There are two types of love. There is one type of love in Sanskrit is known as sambhoga, which means love when you're together. And another type of love is known as vipralamba, which is love when you're separated. So in English, they have a saying, absence makes the heart grow
stronger
or fonder, actually they say. So absence makes the heart grow fonder. So the deeper reason why Ram banished Sita is not because he had a doubt in her character, is not because he there was some defect in his own character, but because by creating a distance between them, then he would actually create a deeper intensity of love and a meeting of hearts between them. So Lord Ram wanted to experience love in separation. And so even though Sita did nothing wrong, he created a separation between them in order to experience a deeper type of love. That's the deeper reason why Ram banished Sita, not because of any other reason.
How long did it last? The exile?
The rest. 13. Oh, the exile?
The Sita's exile.
That was for the rest. Of...
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Inconceivable.
Yeah, it's... There's a famous story that once, how does this story go? Okay, I can't remember. It will come to me in a second. Maybe, yeah. Someone else has a question? Yes.
So when we understand that Kaikeyi got influenced by this Mantara,
yeah.
But I heard a class once, but it was online, so I couldn't ask the question. So on how this, she was influenced because somehow in her heart, very deeply, there was a little bit that feeling, because they were saying that you cannot be influenced if that bad thing is not in your heart, it's not like inside of you somehow. So my question is how to, like, when we have people around us that might give us some bad influences and we feel we don't want to do it, but at the same time there is this part inside of us that
wants to respond
to this bad influence. Mm-hmm. How can we let win the part of us that is bad?
I think the other day in Villa Vrindavan I was giving the example of graffiti on the wall, and I was saying there's two ways to make the wall clean again, and one of them is to try to rub it out, but usually that doesn't work. So the more practical way to make the wall clean again is to paint over it. So generally in spiritual life, when we're talking about how to get rid of anarthas, getting rid of anarthas or this kind of negativity in the heart which responds to bad association, criticism, which, you know, getting rid of these things is known as anartha nivritti, getting rid of the unwanted things in the heart. But the teachers explained that while we should try to do that, the other very, very important thing is artha pravritti, which is developing the good things. So generally, if we try to just like stay away from temptation, stay away from bad association, stay away from anything which will bring about this aggravation of the negative qualities within us, if you just do that, most likely you will again fall into bad influence, because how much can you stay separate from these things? So we try to be cautious not to have those kind of influences around us. But the real way that we'll overcome it is by developing positive Krishna consciousness, by developing love, by developing spiritual desires, by painting over all of those things. You know, like our our memory is like a stack. So whatever images have come, they go on the top of the stack. So what happens is that if you put material images in, then it's very it's right there on the surface of your mind. But if you put more and more spiritual impressions, spiritual service, spiritual association, spiritual practice, then what happens is as you put more and more spiritual impressions, then the material impressions go lower and lower into the stack. And so even though they've not disappeared, they're so low in the stack that they don't come into your mind anymore. And so the real way to get rid of it is try to cover it over with spiritual, positive spiritual impressions. So stay in good environments, positive environments, away from situations and people who will bring about, you know, aggravate those things within you, the envy, the greed. It's interesting, even within devotee circles, it's not that, oh, everyone's a devotee and therefore we should openly associate with everyone. But even amongst devotees, there are different grades of seriousness and sincerity. So you should also be careful about even which devotees you spend a lot of time with, because everyone's at a different level. So always, I was just in Vrindavan And I was in Prabhupada's house. And you have you all seen the video, the final lesson?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is like the final days of Srila Prabhupada. And he's lying on the bed and he's translating Bhagavatam right till the final moment. And it's very, very interesting. One of Prabhupada's very final things that he said in the Bhagavatam, perhaps the very final purport that Prabhupada ever dictated, in that purport he said, always try to seek out good association. Always try to seek out good association. So yeah, if you have good association, then all of those things in the heart, the envy, the anger, the lust, gradually will disappear. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Wonderful point. And I think I'm contemplating, I'm observing you, and I'm trying to learn the way you move, the way you act, the way you deal with so many devotees at the same time. I can only imagine how many projects and devotees you are speaking to, dealing with, and you do it in such a wonderful, expert, and loving way. But there's also, I guess, I can feel, also, I can understand, there's also intelligence. We don't just take and give association to anybody. We need to be able to discriminate. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to do it. That's why I'm trying to also observe that in you and other seniors. But I see that quality, and this is just my reflection. I think it's important because we want to be compassionate, but at the same time we cannot be naive, as we were discussing the other morning with Martina also. And that's just my reflection. And another question concerning Sita. I heard, because I'm still a bit, my mind is disturbed by the fact that Rama and Sita for the rest of her life. So I heard that the Sita that was kidnapped by Ravan wasn't the real Sita, because Sita and Ram are always together. Yeah. As well as something probably that like Krishna never really left Vrindavan, because Radha and Krishna are always together, something like that.
Yes.
Can you...
Yeah, there's actually two things. Like when this whole thing came about questioning Sita's chastity, the first thing that happened is Ram did a fire test. It was called Agni Pariksha. And Sita said that if I've been unchaste, then when I walk into this fire, anyway, she passed that test. It was clear that, when Ravan had kidnapped Sita, it wasn't the actual Sita who had been kidnapped. It was like an illusory Sita. But still, it is said that when Ram banished Sita, he actually did banish Sita. He actually banished her. And it's very hard. Even to this day, the Vaishnavas, they can't... Gaugavinda Maharaj used to explain it like this. like you can have a mango, right? So imagine there's a mango, you can have different types of mango. You can have a green mango, which is unripe. You can have a golden mango, which is like ripe, juicy, and you can have a darkish mango, which is like kind of, we can say, a little spoiled. So he would say Krishna is like the darkish mango, he's a spoil in a nice way. He's like, he's always doing mischievous things, he's playing tricks, he doesn't always follow his word, he steals, he does all kind of unspeakable things. So Krishna, he's a mango, he's a supreme lord, but he's a little, he's spoiled. And then he used to say the golden mango is like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is like, just, you see, like if a mango is very ripe, as soon as you touch it, immediately the juice comes out. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is like that. He's just so magnanimous, so kind, just giving so much. Golden, beautiful, ripe. very sweet. And then Govinda Maharaj said, Ram, he's like a green mango. He's a mango. He's the Supreme Lord. He has all the qualities. But he's green. He's not ripe. The full sweetness of God has not come out. So sometimes when you see Ram, he's like, he's the Lord, he's doing the right thing, he wants to be a good example, he banishes Sita because, you know, he has to be a ruler and everyone has to trust him. But you think, where's the sweetness? So in Ram, the full sweetness of God is not being manifested. And so, because Ram came with a specific purpose, and his purpose was to show, like, how to be exemplary. Now, you may say, but it's not very exemplary to banish your wife. What kind of example is that? But it's not that he exactly banished her. He sent her to the ashram, where she would be cared for, where she would be protected, and provided her with everything. But because he had a duty to be a king who was above suspicion, then he put that as priority, because remember, he was coming as the Supreme Lord to be exemplary, to show the exemplary. Even after hearing all of this, it still breaks the hearts of the devotees. Even when we hear why Krishna left Vrindavan, it still breaks the hearts of the devotees. But when it breaks the heart of the devotees, it actually creates another sense of deeper connection as well. This is the mystery. Like in Sanskrit, separation is known as viraha. Yeah, you heard this word? Viraha. Viraha is a Sanskrit word which means separation. But viraha has a double meaning. Vishesha rahasya unmilam. So viraha means separation, but viraha also means vishesha, which means special, and rahasya unmilam means a confidential meeting. So the Sanskrit word for separation means, the Sanskrit word viraha means separation, and simultaneously means a very special kind of confidential meeting. So that's the nature of spiritual separation. That in spiritual separation, you actually feel more connected, more close, more more intensely involved with that person. But we can't understand it in the material world, because in the material world, in English they say, out of sight, out of mind. But in the spiritual world, absence makes the heart grow closer. So spiritual relationship, spiritual love goes beyond time and space. In this world, when relationships are separated by time and relationships are separated by space, then ultimately it means the relationship becomes separated. But in the spiritual sphere, relationships transcend time and space. So when time and space make one more separated, the relationship comes closer together. That's why, like, say for example, you have a spiritual relationship with someone and they pass away. Actually, if it's a truly spiritual relationship, you begin to feel their presence more even after they've left this world. At the same time, you feel separated from them. How's that possible? I don't know. We'll have to find out.
I heard a lecture by my Gurudev, Dadvara Rani, when she's with Krishna, she sees one Krishna.
Yeah.
But when she's separated from Krishna, she sees a thousand Krishnas. Yeah. Because she sees Krishna everywhere. In the bees, she sees him in the trees, in the, like, all over Vrindavan.
Rupa Goswami quotes this verse, and Radharani says, If I would have the option of being with Krishna or not being with Krishna, I prefer not to be with Krishna. Because when I'm with Krishna, I see one Krishna. But when I'm separated, I see Krishna everywhere. But at the same time, when Krishna leaves Vrindavan, then Radharani is like, wow, stopping him. Where are you going? Govinda Dhamo Dharamadavedi. She's singing, they're crying. But at the same time, when they're separated, she feels an intense type of love. So it's all paradoxical. Your spiritual love, you can't understand it on the level of the intellect.
Lo chiedere se può descrivere ancora, cioè se può descrivere del qualità di Sita.
I wanted to ask if you could describe further some qualities of Sita Devi.
E se Sita rappresenta un femminile universale, quindi che riguarda tutti gli esseri umani.
And if Sita represents a universal type of femininity that is of every living entity?
Se è una femminile che riguarda appunto anime che hanno corpo.
Or if it's a femininity that is concerned to, it regards with the feminine body, or is universal femininity?
Yeah, beautiful. I guess we could see Sita Devi's qualities in many ways, but one of the most important qualities of Sita Devi, which is representing the feminine aspect, is the quality of chastity. And what we learn from Sita Devi's life is her chastity to Lord Ram. When she was to get married, there was no question, only it could be Lord Ram. So there was the famous pastime of the lifting of the bow. No one could lift it, but only Ram could lift it. When Ram was being banished to the forest, there was no question, chastity, I have to be with Ram. Later on, when she was kidnapped by Ravan, there was no question of compromising with Ravan. Chastity to Lord Ram. And even at the end, when Ram banished Sita, there was no question, chastity to Lord Ram. If he wants to banish me, then I should go. There was no argument there. At every moment, Sita Devi was chaste to Lord Ram. What this means in a deeper way is complete alignment of desires. Chastity basically means that there's a complete alignment of desires. Now, the chastity of Sita Devi represents the chastity that every soul should have to Krishna. We say chastity is a feminine quality, yeah? Generally, whenever we talk about chastity, we talk about women being chaste to their husbands, isn't it? Don't really talk so much about men being chaste to their wives. We always talk about it the other way. Chastity is seen as a feminine quality. But now we have to understand that all of us are actually female. In the ontological sense, I don't know how you say ontological. In the ontological sense, everyone is female because we're all prakriti, and the enjoyer is who?
God.
The Supreme Lord, God, Purusha. There's only one Purusha, and all of us are prakriti. There's a famous story, Srila Prabhupada, he didn't necessarily believe that this was true, but still, they say it in Vrindavan. And what they say in Vrindavan is that Jiva Goswami was living in Vrindavan. He was a great renunciate follower. And one time Mirabai came to Vrindavan. You know Mirabai? She was a lady saint who had like said, I'm married to Krishna. I've given my heart to Krishna. She was traveling as a saint. And she came to Vrindavan And she came and she sent a message that I want to see Jiva Goswami. I heard he's a great saint. So the message came to Jiva Goswami. And Jiva Goswami sent a message back to her saying, I understand you're a great devotee, but I'm a renunciate and we don't meet ladies. And she sent a message back to Jiva Goswami saying, everyone's a lady. Because everyone is Prakriti, the energy of Krishna. And apparently Jiva Goswami said, yes, you have defeated me. So some people agree with this story, they don't. But still it has a teaching for us. So the feminine quality that Sita Devi represents is chastity. And that chastity is actually the chastity that every soul is trying to achieve in this world, which is a complete alignment of desire with Krishna. That there comes a point in life when we just naturally make every decision in our life. We naturally see everything in our life. We naturally move our life in such a way that it's all from the point of view of Krishna. Now, it's very hard to imagine how can you ever live a life like that? But you get a glimpse of it, like you're a mother. So you have a glimpse of that. Like when you're a mother and you're bringing your child up, there comes a point where everything in your life, you're not really seeing it from your point of view, you're seeing it from the point of view of your child. All the decisions, all the way you live your life is from the point of view of how will this help my child. You get a glimpse of that. So eventually our relationship with Krishna becomes so deep in that way that everything in life we're seeing from like Krishna's point of view, that kind of chastity. There are many other qualities we can learn from Sita, but just something.